In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every town has a dark side. This is Andrew Fitzgerald from the Every Town podcast, where every single week we dive into insane and mysterious true crime stories, most of which you've never heard of. Stories like the bizarre disappearance of Tyler Davis in Columbus, Ohio, a 29-year-old father trying to find his way back to his hotel when he disappeared and was never heard from again. And Elizabeth Schoaf from Lugoff, South Carolina, who was abducted from her driveway by a madman and taken to his underground bunker in the woods. And we give you all the details you're interested in hearing about without any fluff or fillers, because ain't nobody got time for that. We cover everything from psychopaths to poltergeists, so go check out the Every Town podcast, because every town, no matter how nice it may seem, has a dark side.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
On this episode, the U.S. Department of Justice investigation into Crossfire Hurricane explained.
When you look at the Horowitz report, you realize that everybody is so clearly imbued with the notion that we're all going to go get Trump that you almost didn't need to give any direction. It really is a lot like a mafia conspiracy. These guys know what they're supposed to do. They're not there creating documents showing their guilt. So that's the problem.
If you're a fan of this podcast or my weekly radio program, The Conspiracy Show, or my YouTube channel, Strange Planet, I hope you'll consider becoming an official donor. Any monthly amount is welcome and greatly appreciated. To become an official donor, go to patreon.com/strangeplanet. patreon.com/strangeplanet.
Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett. Pursuing the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. Revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. Coming to you from his studio beneath the stairs. Here's Richard Serrett.
Welcome to your Monday. U.S. Attorney John Durham, appointed by Attorney General Bill Barr to review U.S. officials' handling of the investigation into the Trump campaign's ties to Russia, landed a guilty plea recently for the only charge stemming from his probe so far. Former FBI Attorney Kevin Kleinsmith, part of the team that prepared applications to surveil Trump campaign aide Carter Page, pleaded guilty to one count of making a false statement. Specifically, Kleinsmith admitted altering the content of an email from another official used in internal decision-making. Kleinsmith's misconduct was initially revealed by Inspector General Michael Horowitz in a report last year, and it stood out as the most egregious instance of widespread problems with how the FBI handled Page's surveillance. Here to discuss is John O'Connor. John is an experienced trial lawyer practicing law in San Francisco. He's tried cases in state and federal court throughout the country. He served as an assistant U.S. attorney in North Carolina, representing the United States in both criminal and civil cases. Among his interesting assignments was representing Mark Felt regarding the revelation of his identity as Deep Throat. John is the author of Postgate: How the Washington Post Betrayed Deep Throat, Covered Up Watergate, and Began Today's Partisan Advocacy Journalism. John O'Connor, welcome back to Conspiracy Unlimited. How are you?
Richard, I'm great.
Kevin Kleinsmith, former FBI attorney, has pleaded guilty to altering an email that ended up justifying an application to wiretap Carter Page. Let me ask you about the seriousness of that charge, this indictment. It's a felony, but how serious is it?
Well, Richard, let me give you a couple of maybe mixed metaphors. One is that he is the cherry on the top of a very dirty sundae. And at the same time, he's also the low-hanging fruit for Barr. So I've mixed my metaphors and will say, first of all, the reason he's the low-hanging fruit is, and you don't need much more work, Barr and Durham are clearly doing more work, but is because he clearly went so far as to demonstrably change the evidence. He altered a document, no doubt about it. That's no good. That's a bad thing to do. And they've got him. Okay. Whereas other people, it appears they lied, they dissembled, they omitted, they concealed during this whole FISA process, but had arguable basis, plausible deniability. So that's the easy one to get. But here's why it's I say it's the cherry on top of a very dirty sundae. This idea of Carter Page, what he did was he changed an email specifically to change the view of to change the email to reflect a view of Carter Page that was untrue, and it essentially quashed any exculpatory information about Carter Page. The whole group of these FBI agents had been doing that for the prior 8 months. This guy just got forced into it by circumstances to actually make a direct lie, so to speak, direct and provable lie.
The CIA had said that Carter Page was a source for them. In other words, he worked with the CIA on occasion, and the email was altered by Kleinsmith to remove that. So he basically said there was no cooperation between Carter Page and the CIA. He was not a source.
Right. And not only that, the CIA knew and had verified that this guy was perfectly patriotic, had rebuffed Russian intelligence officers. And more than that, it was even in 2016 where they are prosecuting, the prosecutors are prosecuting some Russian intelligence agencies that had tried to recruit Page. And Page was listed in the indictment as male number one. And he was a cooperating witness in that case as male number one. So, and the prosecutors were relying on him to tell the truth. They thought he was telling the truth. And this is at the same time that he's a witness in favor of the government, they are claiming he's in this wide-ranging conspiracy that is illegal, and he's in a treasonous conspiracy with the Russian government. It just shows you how important it was. The other thing that your listeners should know is that the entire FISA process depended upon the slender reed of Carter Page. If they didn't get Carter Page as a Russian agent, they wouldn't be able to wiretap anybody. And they're wiretapping everybody. When I say wiretap, electronically surveilling and reading their emails. So, and if you get to Carter Page, you get at least two jumps. That is to say, he talks to Bannon. You can then surveil Bannon. Bannon talks to Trump. You can surveil Trump. Bannon talks to Corey Lewandowski. You can surveil Corey Lewandowski. So getting into Page meant you got into the entire campaign. And so you needed to get into somebody. You needed to plausibly tell the FISA court that somebody was a Russian agent. And Page was the only guy that had been to Russia, had any talks with anybody at any time. And they completely hyped it up beyond recognition as to what had really happened. Guy was just a guy that was a wheeler dealer trying to get an energy deal in Russia. This whole thing is very, very dirty. Now, here's what I would say. I'll call it an investigation goes on, the original FISA application is renewed three times. Each time they renew, they have to make a new pledge to the court that they have verified everything. Now, what happens is they get more and more undeniable knowledge. At the beginning of the process, they all had knowledge, but they all tried to see no evil, hear no evil. But as the process went on, it got worse and worse, and the deniability became harder to swallow. So what I say is, as this process goes on, people like Andrew McCabe are more provably guilty with each omission on each succeeding FISA application. So I think Comey is probably too high, Richard. He is denying knowledge of everything. He's way high up on the totem pole. And the only way you can get him is through McCabe, you know, an oral briefing. So that's not going to happen.
Right.
And but you can get McCabe because he's in touch with other people and he has to sort of bless the FISA application. He directly is involved with the people putting it together. He argues very vociferously from the very beginning that there should be no indication in the FISA application that Steele was hired by a political campaign. When the footnote was finally put in over McCabe's great objection, it was very much watered down, and you read it and you couldn't tell that he was working for Hillary Clinton. But as time went on, that sort of thing got less and less deniable. Everybody knew who he was working for, Steele was. Everybody knew this was a political hit job, and they kept verifying the same allegations over and over again. Then in early 2017, the FBI, which had omitted any interviewing of the primary subsource, in other words, Steele did not claim to have any knowledge of this. He had a primary subsource that did not claim to have personal knowledge, and the primary subsource relies on a bunch of people who themselves may only have hearsay knowledge. But as of the time of the first FISA application, no one had bothered to even interview the primary subsource to say, by the way, who are your subsources? Are they any good? Do we know? Are they just guys that, you know, you've picked out of the phone book, so to speak? No one tried to check up. They didn't check up because they didn't want to know the answers. Finally, they're more or less forced by circumstances and a lot of questions being asked to interview the primary subsource. Now, the primary subsource comes in and says, he knows it's all a lot of baloney that's in there. And he said, oh, come on, now you can't take any of this seriously. This is just bar talk. And some of these people are embellishers, they're fabricators. You can't really rely on any of it. It's kind of bar talk. Well, they knew that as of late January, early February. And that's when Peter Strzok writes a memo that says, hey, there's nothing here. Now, as of that time, shouldn't you, first of all, go back to the FISA court and say, hey, there's some errors to correct here. We put in some false stuff in the record. At the very least, the next time they apply for a FISA warrant, they should say, oh, by the way, we've interviewed the primary subsource, and this whole thing is a lot of baloney.
Hmm.
No one did that. And McCabe is responsible for that. And also the lower case agent, I feel sorry for the guy, his name Case Agent One. So whoever Case Agent One is, and McCabe, I think, are on the firing line. I don't know. Now, that's one aspect of this.
I wanted to circle back to Kleinsmith for a moment, because in his, I believe it's called an allocution to the judge, basically explaining why he's guilty, because he pled guilty. He said that, yes, he did alter the email, but he didn't realize it was inaccurate. He said he had received a call from someone in the CIA, I believe he named the individual, and they said that Carter Page wasn't a source. This person then was located in the CIA, and they had no recollection of that conversation. So the allocution seems kind of preposterous. So then the question is, why did they allow that plea deal unless he gave up other information that we don't know about yet?
Well, they have to allow him to plead because, and the question is whether he's getting anything for it. You can come in and have a naked plea where you don't get any promises from the prosecutor. And if you've only charged with one count of a false statement, and it's a false statement if you simply alter a document. So that itself is a false statement. And I've had those cases, and he's arguing, well, I thought it was making it truer, but the fact is he altered it. So the judge would allow that plea, the prosecutors would allow the plea, and the question that we don't know is there a deal? Did he agree to cooperate? I would think he would cooperate because, or at least pretend to cooperate, claim he's cooperating, so that he can get various points with the judge under the scheme, the sentencing schemes and the sentencing guidelines. So cooperation is a big factor. Now, the question is, will he really cooperate, number one? And does he have knowledge of other people more or less knowing that he was doing this? And by the way, his that's the question. Can he roll over on anybody? Can he give information that would get somebody else? I can't believe that he did this of his own accord. The only problem is when you look at the Horowitz report, you realize that everybody is so clearly imbued with the notion that we're all going to go get Trump that you almost didn't need to give any direction. It really is a lot like a mafia conspiracy. These guys know what they're supposed to do. They're not there creating documents showing their guilt. So that's the problem. What can Kleinsmith bring you? I don't know. And that's why I mentioned the whole idea of McCabe and Case Agent One, that regardless of what Kleinsmith does and rolls over on, that at least you can probably get the people who are knowingly putting before the FISA court false information or unsupported information or information that is not verified. One of the things I'd like to talk to you about, though, Richard, is we all are focusing on the FISA application, the Crossfire Hurricane investigation that starts in the middle of 2016, July 31. There's a lot of bad stuff going on before then that late date for the start of the investigation covers up. In other words, the FBI would like to say, oh, well, we started this on July 31st, 2016. You can't look at anything before that. There are a lot of things that are going on before July 31st, 2016 that the FBI knows about. And where I would go on this, the reason I'm saying this is because someone in the FBI, there are FBI guys that were working with John Brennan, and John Brennan was just grilled for 8 hours. And one of the questions is, Brennan, did you know that Joseph Mifsud, the Maltese professor, was not a Russian asset? Answer, yes, we knew that. Did you know the British helped, with your help, brought him in to do this George Papadopoulos thing and to try to hook in George Papadopoulos with Putin's alleged niece? That whole scenario became the basis for them even starting Crossfire Hurricane. And it was based on the false notion that this Maltese professor was a Russian asset. Who knew in the FBI that this was really Russian intelligence? If anyone in the FBI knew that and allowed Crossfire Hurricane to be predicated upon this, and this predication continued on in the FISA applications, then that person is really conspiring to commit a falsity, a false application, and that person is persons are prosecutable. Now, I think Peter Strzok was actively involved with John Brennan's team. They had an interagency team that appeared to have been formed December 2015 when they first got this Estonian tip, and then they later on got some more Estonian tips in March. But this interagency group was formed December 2015. So what did Brennan tell these folks? What visibility did the FBI have into this this information? And whoever had it and allowed a false picture of it to be painted before the FISA court should be indicted.
More of my conversation with John O'Connor when Conspiracy Unlimited returns.
I'm Andrew Gold, a fallen BBC journalist interviewing the heretics and rebels brave enough to speak out against mainstream narratives. Here's Coleman Hughes, John Ronson, and the Trigonometry podcast guys bringing controversy to the fore.
How'd you feel if a person of a different race moved in next door?
I spent a while with a politically correct faction of the Ku Klux Klan.
The system punishes people for wrongthink. It's heartbreaking.
Here's My Unorthodox Life Netflix star Julia Hart on getting out of a Hasidic Jewish cult.
Why can't I be okay with being silent and subservient? Everyone else is.
And biologist Richard Dawkins on trans activism.
It's perfectly legitimate to say, I'm a man, but I feel feminine. But to then say, therefore I am a woman, is just a betrayal of language.
Now it's your turn. Rebel against the mainstream and find a home in this sensible alternative space by subscribing to Heretics Podcast.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to be buried in an avalanche?
Weird foreign feeling of despair.
Or how it feels to crash a skydive.
I remember hearing a thud, feeling my body hit the ground.
Or how you would react if you were being attacked by an alligator.
At the end of my leg is this huge alligator head on my leg.
These are the stories you'll hear on the podcast called What Was That Like? True stories told by the actual person who went through it. You'll hear from a victim of an attack.
Dragging me into the bathroom and saying, I'm going to kill you. Now you're going to die.
You'll hear from a man who discovered a baby.
How could this be? How could there be a baby on the ground?
And you'll hear actual 911 calls.
Plinky County 911. There's a man at my back door. He's trying to get in.
What Was That Like is a podcast about real people in unreal situations. Search for What Was That Like on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
It's time once again to welcome Colleen Forgas, our nutritional expert and the manager at Strange Planet Full Script Dispensary. Colleen, welcome.
Hi, Richard. How are you today?
I'm terrific, but a lot of people are in a bit of a panic. A lot of people are stressed with this whole coronavirus thing, but people just need to keep calm. What do we have to help people calm themselves?
Richard, there's a product called Mag Soothe. Mag being short for magnesium. And this is a powder, which is a fast-acting, calming, raspberry lemonade-flavored powder. Magnesium is important for over 325 functions in the body. It helps to promote a restful sleep. It's good for muscle tone and function. It helps us to balance our stress response. Good for blood pressure, blood sugar, digestion, hormones. It has a wide variety of things that are important for the body, but especially helps with stress.
Terrific. To get your Mag Soothe, just go to strangeplanet.ca and click on the Full Script Dispensary button. Remember, all orders receive 10% off, and orders of $50 or more ship for free. These products have not been evaluated by the FDA and are not intended to treat, diagnose, or cure. If you have a medical concern, please consult your healthcare provider.
In another reality, Richard is a very strong and handsome man. Just not in our reality. Although I heard somebody passing him in the hall the other day, and it was, what a handsome man Richard is. I made that up. Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett.
John O'Connor is here, and we're discussing John Durham's interview with the former head of the CIA, John Brennan. Okay, so then why would Durham, during his eight-hour interview with Brennan at CIA headquarters, tell Brennan that he was not the target of a criminal investigation, that he was a witness?
Well, because he's a witness, because unfortunately the twain does not meet. You have Brennan and the CIA, and then you have the FISA process. That's solely domestic. By law, Brennan is not supposed to be involved in the FISA process. He's protected by this wall between CIA being foreign intelligence versus domestic intelligence of foreign people. So the FBI has any domestic counterintelligence work as to foreign assets. So the ball is sort of passed. When you do a FISA application, the ball is passed from Brennan to the FBI, and all Brennan can be is a witness. So that's how he's protected. That's why I told you before, Brennan's protected by that. Comey's protected by being on the seventh floor and talking to no one other than McCabe and doing so mainly orally. But let's say Brennan, let me give you a for instance, let's say Brennan says, oh yes, I knew that. One of the first things Brennan did is he went to Rome to go to a secure facility to listen to Mifsud's deposition. He and Durham, when they came back, they opened a criminal investigation. So Brennan could be a witness in this sense. Who was on the FBI team with you? Well, it's Peter Stroke, it's Joe Blow, it's Bill Priestap, it's this person. Did you tell them that Joseph Mifsud was planted in there by using British intelligence and that he was a Western asset? Oh, yes, we told them that. And did they approve of the plan to go in and try to do a confidential human source on George Papadopoulos? Yes, yes, I told them that. We had to have their sign-off. All right. Did they know then that when this whole counterintelligence thing was started with Crossfire Hurricane, did they know that the whole basis for it started with this phony professor? Well, you know, I think he could probably say yes, or I don't know, but they knew about Mifsud. So the other thing is, Brennan may also be a witness as to this Alexander Downer, who is the guy who was tasked by some intelligence agency with getting from Papadopoulos what Mifsud had told him. So you could now have a legit guy come in and say, oh, Papadopoulos told me what Russian Mifsud had told me. Now you can have that guy who is designated the friendly foreign government that comes in and says, oh my gosh, Mrs. Cleaver, there's something bad here. You know, there's Russian emails that Papadopoulos told us me about, horrors. And I saw that there was a WikiLeaks dump the day before. And when I saw that, I thought, oh, I better go tell somebody. So this was all pre-planned by the intelligence people, British intelligence, and Brennan were working together. So all that he should know about. But at that point, luckily for him, his involvement stops. Now when Crossfire Hurricane starts, it's solely FBI, solely domestic stuff. And Brennan is a witness. He's also a guy, by the way, that is trying to stir up bad publicity. So it's not like he's an angel. He's not. He's out there talking to Harry Reid. He's probably giving him a different briefing than he's giving the Republicans. So he's a bad guy, but it's just very hard to get him on anything other than just get him on anything.
Right.
He's a dirty guy, but not necessarily approvable criminal guy. So that's why I say, though, that there's some exposure to the FBI people from that 6 month time between Crossfire is opened and interagency group is opened in 2015. So there are two ways to go on this. And so I see perhaps somebody like Peter Stroke being indicted for knowledge of Misfood. And then as the investigation goes on, McCabe and Case Agent One, who did not report, there's a group called OI within the Justice Department that fills out the FISA applications. They're straight guys. They go out and get information from the FBI, and they fill out the application. Well, people were lying and concealing from the OI, and I think McCabe's one of them, and I think Case Agent One is one of them, and perhaps some other people too. But that's where we have it. There might be two or three or four people that they get. The problem is there's a little bit of slow walking there in terms of documents from both the CIA and from Ray at the FBI. So that's what's holding them up. COVID was probably an excuse. But here's my problem, Richard. I'm worried about the election coming up and the ethical feelings of Durham and Barr that they don't want to indict too close to an election.
Right. That was my next question, because Barr is in a bit of a difficult situation, because we saw what happened to, for example, with Comey before the election and the email situation. And so now Trump has huge expectations from Barr. He wants, obviously, heads to roll before the November election. And he's publicly, I don't know if I would use the word pressuring Barr, but he said things like, well, if he goes the political correct route, he's not going to be a great attorney general, but he could be a great attorney general. He could go down in history as a great attorney general, meaning, you know, if he prosecutes. So how do you think this is going to roll out?
Unfortunately for Trump, probably fortunately for our system of justice, Barr will be absolutely straight down the line. This is nobody's fool. He's nobody's patsy. The Democrats are trying to portray him as being Trump's henchman. He's not. This is a straight guy. He's a very, very devout Catholic. He's honest. The guy and is a very smart guy. So all I can say is if he doesn't do it because of these time constraints, I got to say he's doing the right thing, even though it does not. It lets the Democrats off the hook. And that may happen. That may happen. And I just got to tell you that, Richard, it sort of is bothering me, because I think once you get to September 8th, what are we, August 26th today? I think you get to September 8th at 60 days before the election. I think you're starting to get into a sensitive time period. Certainly October 8th, you can't do it. But even September 8th, you know, people are voting. And I just think that Barr and Durham may not be able to issue the indictments in time. Hopefully they've got another, if not low-hanging fruit, decent hanging fruit, that even if they're not going to get everybody by the election, there will be somebody there, like, for instance, on the knowledge of Misfood, for example, that they can get. Perhaps they can do McCabe beforehand, because there's so much that was not included in the subsequent FISA applications that McCabe had to know about. So maybe they feel there's a solid enough case against one guy to do something before, unfortunately, I'm going to say September 8th. I don't know what they're thinking. It might be October 8th, might be the witching day. But it's not going to be any later than October 8th, I'll tell you that.
Going back to Klein Smith again, being low-hanging fruit. I mean, he is really the lowest-hanging fruit, because he was served up on a platter because the IG, Horowitz, mentioned him in his report that this had happened. And so he simply turned it over to the Department of Justice for investigation or prosecution. So after all this, that's the one indictment they come down with. It just seems kind of disappointing. The lowest of all hanging fruit, really.
Right, and it's just a laydown. It's just easy. It's a piece of cake, and the poor guy, he's a young guy, and he was sort of forced into this position. And the question is, did everybody just sort of wink and nod and let him know what he had to do without actually saying anything? Because everybody's been covering up exculpatory information on Carter Page for 8 months, and this poor guy is the guy that gets left holding the bag, and I think he probably feels it's his duty to come in and do something. I can't believe he didn't tell anybody. If he told anybody he did it, they're conspiring right there to at least cover up a crime. It remains to be seen if he rolls over on somebody. I just he may not. I mean, it may well be that this whole thing was a mafia type of deal, wink and a nod. Don't say anything. Don't put anything down in writing. You don't have to. And he just went a little too far and went with his email without anybody telling him overtly. So I'm afraid, Richard, I sort of share if I sense a pessimistic cast to your voice. I share it.
So let's look ahead then, post-election. Let's say regardless of the outcome, the investigation would continue, I guess, unless Barr was replaced as an attorney general right away. That could happen. But let's assume Trump wins for a moment. After the election, could we see, for example, someone like Sally Yates, who recently said, oh, she regrets the whole FISA court situation and the wiretapping of Carter Page? How far up the ladder could this go? You mentioned McCabe, not likely Comey, but could there be members of Obama's administration indicted?
Well, first of all, let me answer one question. If Barr indicts after November 8th and before January 20th, all the Democrats will yell and scream that he's just an irresponsible henchman, and they'll end up dismissing the indictments. That's what will happen if Trump is not elected. So in spite of Barr's good work, they will not probably carry through on a lot of these indictments. But let's assume Trump wins. Barr's already said he's not going to get Obama or Biden. And I understand that. And I think there's probably, without going through a tortured explanation, there's probably good reasons for it. I personally think that Comey's failure to tell Trump about a FISA investigation and a FISA warrant while Trump is president, and it's an investigation that by law and by the Constitution is the president's, and he's hiding it from him. Can you imagine hiding an investigation from Franklin Roosevelt of the Russians in his administration? Of course not. That said, you know, they know that Comey is going to say, gee, I thought I was doing the right thing. I just didn't think it was right because I thought Trump might be really, really guilty. I think he committed a crime there, but I also think he can probably wiggle his way out. How high up will it go? I don't think, for various reasons, I don't think it's Sally Yates. You know, there was that Oval Office meeting on January 5 with memorialized by Susan Rice's January 20 memo as she was leaving the office. They all knew that Comey was hiding things from the incoming administration. But I think they're going to wiggle out of that. I think that's a crime. But like I say, I think Comey's going to justify it by this, aren't I an honest guy, higher loyalty. I really am just the Cardinal Comey. And it will probably be enough to get him out of an indictment, even though he was deliberately concealing something in a matter within the Justice Department, within the executive branch. That's clearly a crime under 18 U.S.C. 1001A1. There's no doubt about it, but he can say, gee, I didn't have criminal intent here. I thought I was doing the right thing. So where is it going to go? I think if you get McCabe, you know, maybe McCabe will do something to Comey. I don't know. But I think that's the best you can hope for is McCabe. Nobody higher than that. It might go down to somebody like Stroke and, like I say, the hapless case agent one who probably was forced into this. Those are probably the people that and remember this, anything that Vice President Biden and President Obama did regarding national security is pretty much immune from second guessing. They can do about anything they want in that area. You know, and you can't accuse them of any activity sort of past January 20th. They knew that Comey was going to do this, but on the other hand, they had no power after January 20th. And so I think Barr's going to let them go. And that's why he's already said he's going to let them go.
John, before I let you go, you and I have talked in depth on another episode about Postgate, how the Washington Post betrayed Deep Throat, covered up Watergate, and began today's partisan advocacy journalism. For those who didn't hear that episode, give people a little bit of a taste of your work with the family of the late Mark Felt, who was Deep Throat, and what the book is about.
Well, yeah, Richard, as a result of my work with Mark Felt, I'd always known he was Deep Throat, and when I finally started working for him in the early 2000s, I had more and more contact with the Post, who I always had admired for their Watergate reporting. And lo and behold, they kept putting my head in the dumpster so often. I have an intriguing book here. It's just a juicy, intriguing book about how I came to this. I mean, your readers will have fun, if nothing else, besides getting enlightened on Watergate and Watergate journalism. But finally, I said, you know, there's something funny here. So I spent years of my life getting every Washington Post article and showing how in our country's most impactful scandal, the Washington Post deliberately committed fraud. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I'm saying this very out front. It's clear fraud. I prove it in my book. I'm a lawyer. I know how to do this. I've prosecuted cases before in big civil cases. I know what I'm doing. This is clear fraud. And once you understand that they could oust the president and win Pulitzer Prizes, mansions, bestsellers, hit movies for committing fraud, you realize that that's what is going on with our media today. They get their awards, they get their power by being people who put scalps on the wall of the opposing party and by defending their own partisan deal. And what you and I should probably talk about that is apropos of Postgate is, for instance, what the media did regarding Biden's corruption in Ukraine. That's for another day, but I'd love to talk to you about that because that's precisely the kind of thing that the media does. They're either an attack dog on the other side, in that case Trump, or they're a lapdog for their own side, which is Biden. And so during the Ukraine thing, the media says, well, gee, Biden, there's no evidence of any Biden corruption. So that's what Postgate is about. It's about what has happened to our society in terms of journalism, of how journalists became political powers and what they did. And Watergate and Watergate journalism is the most scrutinized scandal, most scrutinized journalism. And yet, why is it that it has taken 48 years for some lawyer in San Francisco to prove this? It's right there. It's a bunch of low-hanging fruit. It takes probably a lot of work to get to that low-hanging fruit. But from my point of view as a lawyer, it's right there. It's right there in black and white once you go through enough documents. So it's an intriguing tale, and I'd love your viewers to get a copy of it. You know, if they don't like it, I'll buy it back from them. But I think it's a good idea for them to read it. I don't care about making money. I want people to know about this and to talk with their friends about it, because the only way we're going to get back our democracy if we have a media that tells the truth. And thank God for shows like yours where, you know, issues are explored in depth and so forth. I just wish you were on a national television channel, Richard.
One day. Well, and people can go to the episode notes for this podcast and click on the book, Postgate, How the Washington Post Betrayed Deep Throat, Covered Up Watergate, and Began Today's Partisan Advocacy Journalism.
Richard, it's been a great to talk with you as always, and thank you.
Okay, before I dim the lights in my little studio beneath the stairs, I'll be back in just a few moments to give you some details on an upcoming episode. One tablespoon of ESS60 from C60 Evo helps keep me pain-free, energized, and mentally focused. And I'm sleeping so much better since I started taking ESS60 back in November. ESS60 is the consumable form of C60, the miracle molecule discovered by Nobel Prize-winning chemists in the 1990s. ESS60 is a mega antioxidant, 172 times more powerful than vitamin C. Check out the Paris study, a peer-reviewed scientific study online, where ESS60 suspended in olive oil was fed to rats. The rats fed ESS60 lived almost twice their normal lifespan. I can't sit here and tell you I'm going to live to be 112, but I'm 56 and I haven't felt this youthful, energized, and pain-free since I was in my 20s. ESS 60 from C60 Evo. If you want to discover the benefits of this amazing miracle molecule for yourself, go to the episode notes for this podcast and click on the link for C60Evo.com. And don't forget to use the code RS1SPEC when ordering, and you'll receive an additional 5% off. ESS 60, the miracle molecule from C60 Evo. It's changed my life. Discover what it can do for you. This product has not been evaluated by the FDA and is not intended to cure, diagnose, or cure. If you have a medical concern, please consult your healthcare provider. Coming up next time on Conspiracy Unlimited, the return of broadcaster Bishop Larry Gators on the Global Vaccine Industrial Complex.
This is an arms race, not an arms race through weapons of mass and chemical destruction. It is an arms race that is being perpetuated by the global elite family. And I'm talking about not just the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers, but also it is being backed by the global pharmaceutical industrial complex.
Until then, I'm Richard Serrett. So long for now.
A new Conspiracy Unlimited with Richard Serrett drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at conspiracyunlimitedpodcast.com. Blow your mind. That is all for now. Oh, and remember to share and give a 5-star review, because we have huge egos and need love. We're like cats. We need... we need constant petting.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a Swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.